Mark Strowman is a prisoner in Texas. By the end of the show, he'll be dead. This is Execution Watch. Huntsville, Texas, death penalty capital of the Western world, where final preparations are underway to execute Strowman by injecting him with massive doses of drugs, usually used to save lives. Over the next hour, KPFT's Execution Watch will provide live coverage and commentary on the state killing. The sole survivor of Strowman's 9/11 revenge attack says the shooter deserves to live, not die. Execution Watch host Ray Hill, legal analyst Jim Skelton, Huntsville reporter outside the death house Gloria Rubick, Houston Vigil reporter Dave Atwood, and special interview guest Chris Castillo, Texas national organizer of Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation. The Execution Watch begins.
And this is Execution Watch. I am Ray Hill. You're listening to radio station KPFT Houston, also KPFT HD1 channel from Houston, also KPFT.org and ExecutionWatch.org, both on the internet and worldwide. Tonight is Execution Watch. We only do this show when someone is about to be executed. This is going to be a different series of Execution Watch because it is rapidly breaking into a breaking news story. I understand that Gloria Rubick, our reporter in Huntsville, has the... I lost Gloria. Fisher back out again. And Gloria Rubick is our reporter in Huntsville, and she's going to give detail. I understand there has been a delay in tonight's execution, and we do not know the duration of that or the whereabouts, but Gloria Rubick and Rick Halpern. Rick is a professor and an activist from the Southern Methodist University in Dallas, and he has been working with a Reyes Bouillon, who is one of the victims that was shot by Mark Strowman. This has been billed alternatively in the media as a hate criminal, a hate crime, a robbery. Mercy, we travel many paths to get here tonight, and maybe we can help sort that out as tonight's program develops. Elizabeth is now on the line trying to reach Gloria, and the minute that goes into hold, I'll pick it up there. Gloria, are you there? I do not have a Gloria here. I don't know what's happening, but perhaps... whoops... Gloria? No Glorias. And so Elizabeth is still trying to get through to Gloria as we do this. But I understand what I think is going on, but I do not know until I get some information from me. Perhaps I can give you some staffing details. That wonderful voice you heard in the beginning of today's show is Larry Douglas, and Larry has joined the crew. Susan Ashley, however, has gotten a reprieve, and she is not here tonight. We do have Jim Skelton, and we have a whole lineup of interesting people in this. And Gloria, are you there? I do not understand why I can't get Gloria.
Yeah, hi, Ray.
Oh, God. Huh. It's been hard getting a collection. Tell us what's going on.
Well, what's going on is nothing, except that there's about 25, 35 people out here in Huntsville, but the execution is not happening. Rick Halpern spoke with Reese about 45 minutes ago, and Reese was walking into County Courthouse and told him he was going to turn off his phone, and the hearing could last a couple of hours. The federal court, for some reason, to the state court. And this is the the lawsuit against Governor Perry.
Okay. Is Rick there?
Yes, Rick is here.
Why don't we get Rick to explain what this lawsuit is all about? Because I think this is a very fascinating thing, and he's been at the apex of this matter.
Right. Okay, let me walk across the street.
Okay.
The Dallas people are in the shade. but, you know, Ron Carlson is here, and he was doing an interview with Dallas TV about victims' rights and how Texas really, how Texas really doesn't give a damn about victims' rights. And it has to do with Rais and the family members of the two people that were killed by Mark Stroman. They are all opposed to this execution. And according to Texas law, victims are supposed to have certain rights. One of them includes a meeting or a mediation with the killer. And the other has to do with their right to request clemency. This has not been allowed to in this case. And Rick looks like he's deep into a TV interview.
Okay, well,
if you'd like to talk to Ron Carlson, he knows all about this, though.
Ron, yeah, sure. Ron's a friend of ours, so put him on.
Okay. And the listener's information, Ron Carlson's sister, Deborah, was murdered by Carla. Ron evolved into a person who was not for the death penalty. In fact, witnessed Carla Faye Tucker's execution, one of her witnesses. Ron is here today, and I will put him on with you. Ron, this is Ray Hill with Execution Watch.
Yeah, that was me.
Ron?
Hi, this is Ron Carlson.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you again, Ron. Of course, I know who you are, and you're with Victims' Families for Reconciliation.
Yes, that is correct.
What's going on with Rais Bouyam's case?
Sorry, Ray, can you repeat that, please?
What's going on with the Rais Bouyam case?
To be honest with you, I can't answer that question. It appears that there's some kind of a holdup somewhere. What I'm seeing is there's been no witnesses walk across the street yet, and it's already after 6 o'clock, and usually at least some of the witnesses have went across. It appears to me that the legal beagles haven't made a decision.
Well, in the production of Execution Watch, nothing is happening is always good news.
That is correct.
Because if anything was happening, that would give indication that other things would be happening. And let me try to sort this out for the audience, and you check me and see if I'm right. According to a report from Rick Halpern, who is there but currently doing television interviews, Mr. Bouyam's case was filed, and he went into Dallas County Courthouse or Dallas Federal Court Building a short time ago, and they're actually having a hearing there. The outcome of that hearing is itself appealable, actually by both sides, because both the prosecution, the state of Texas, and Mr. Bouyam and his attorneys have right of appeal based on that judge's decision. I've got a couple of lawyers in rooms. Jim, could this whole thing be stymied by the lack of judicial action?
I doubt it, and here's why. There's a thing in law called standing. For example, if I have a contract with you, Larry Douglas can't sue in that contract. He doesn't have standing. In this case, Stroman's being executed not for the shooting of Bouyam.
Yeah.
He's being executed for the killing of another man. And I don't know how he has standing to contest that, because he's not the victim of the crime the man's being executed for. Because the problem is standing, because in this case, the execution is not based upon the crime committed to Bouyam. He's not being executed for that. He's being executed for another murder committed later.
Yeah. Okay, well, that person's family is also there. I don't know whether that makes any difference.
That makes a big difference.
They're merely family. Regardless of what the court's decision is that not itself appealable?
Probably not. I would doubt if it would be. I may be incorrect, but the standing is a real major problem with this case. I was unaware of the fact until just now that the family of the man that was tried, he's been tried for, is also there. Now, they in turn would have standing because they would be, because they have victim impact statements all the time in court where the victim's family can come in and they're allowed to say what they want to say in open court to the defendant and confront him. By the same token, the victim's family, if somebody's in prison, if they're the victim of a crime, have the right to mediate with that person in prison. Mediate for what? They never exactly said why.
Sure.
But in this case, Bouillon has absolutely no standing because the case he's being executed for has absolutely nothing to do with Bouillon. That's the problem they've got standing.
Okay. Are you still there with me?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. Is Rick getting available?
Is Rick Halpern available?
Yeah.
Let me hand the phone to Gloria. Okay. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
Ray, I'm going to walk over here to Rick.
Yeah, I appreciate you putting Ron on because Ron and I have been on these things, I guess, ever since Carla Faye's execution.
Associated Press reporter is down here, and he just told me that they're now in the Fifth Circuit. I don't know if that's correct or not on a suit, but I'm walking towards Rick.
Okay. So apparently, if they have gone from federal district court to the Fifth Circuit, something's going on.
Something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, and so we're waiting.
Maybe. Are you giving an update?
I'm trying to.
Because he just stopped it, Ray. They're going to have. Somebody's got to grant a stay. If
yeah.
It's not a stay granted, that's over with.
Right.
And so.
Ray, are you there?
Yes, of course I'm here.
Okay. I'm going to give you to Rick and just.
That's where we're at.
Okay.
And he's just getting ready to hopefully conclude a phone.
Okay. As you can understand, we're competing with a lot of commercial and free world media for attention here because this has began as an execution watch show, and it rapidly now has gone to something entirely different. We got a breaking news story here to see about the execution.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ray.
Okay.
Here's Rick, and Rick, let me tell you, Michael with the Associated Press just told me they're now in Fifth Circuit. So, okay.
Grazik, Gloria?
Yes, yes.
Was that Grazik that told you that?
Yeah.
Well, Grazik has got his finger on the pulse.
Well, I won't tell you on the air what I think of Grazik.
I know what you think of Grazik, but at least he's got connections at AP that he knows
right.
What's going on.
So, he just walked down here and came out. With Dennis Longmire and...
He is heading out?
No, hanging.
Oh, hanging out. Okay.
He's sitting on the corner.
Okay, he's out of solitary confinement and in general population.
Yeah.
Okay, that I understand. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to give you to Rick Halpern, professor from Southern Methodist University.
In the meanwhile, Gloria, keep an eye on Rick. If he heads downtown, let us know right away.
If who heads downtown?
If Grazik heads downtown.
No. Okay.
Okay. Keep an eye on him. Don't let him get out of your sight.
Okay. Here's Rick.
Okay. Rick.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I am well, sir. Are you excited? Do you think that there's a stay conjuring here?
Well, you know, I believe in the old adage where there's life, there's hope, and as long as it's in the courts, there's reason for I want to be as optimistic but as realistic as possible. So
okay, now you have been close to Rhys Bouillon.
Yes, for many months, over about 9 months.
For many months. The question has come up here: how does he have standing in this execution? He is certainly a victim, but not of this case.
Right. Well, in a way, he is because he is, of course, survivor of Mark Stroman's rampage, and as a survivor of that, is arguing that his rights under the Texas Crime Victims Bill are denied and ignored virtually from day one.
Sure, it's always been ignored. I'm familiar with the legislation. I remember when it passed. I remember when Sinfronia Thompson carried it in the House, and I remember when I believe it was Senator West and Rodney Ellis carried it in the Senate.
Right. Well, his part of his argument is that he is allowed under statute. He should have been allowed the Victim Offender Services. Clearly, that's been denied to him to this very minute. And, you know, I know he's arguing that he wasn't asked about his views on the death penalty. Neither were the victim's family members of the two men who were lost. The jury did not know that Ray Ticular and the other victim's family members were opposed to the death penalty. And the juror who come forward to support Race has said that had she known that, she never would have voted for the death penalty.
Are they parties in the suit?
Yes.
Okay, so
I believe that they have been added as an amicus to this case.
Okay, so at this point, all are parties of the suit. But, Jim, would that make a difference?
That would make a major difference. For example, by analogy,
let me tell Rick Alpern, I've got Jim Skelton, who's kind of giving us a running legal analysis of this.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in a regular criminal case, a court can only order restitution for the named person in the indictment. And this seems to me to be the problem of the case, as long as this gentleman, Mr. Bayes, Race, whatever his name is, Race, since he wasn't...
Bouillon
wasn't trying, it wasn't his case, he wouldn't have standing any more than they couldn't order restitution to him in this case. And I think by analogy, he's going to have a real uphill deal to climb to say he has standing to contest it because he didn't get the death penalty for the crime committed against him as another person. Now, if that family is joining, that makes a major difference. They could actually...
Okay, we're trying to figure out who's got standing here, Rick. I hope you don't mind our going through these intellectual gymnastics. The last word you had, they had gone into court.
That is correct. I spoke to Rafe about 20 minutes ago, and they were literally heading into the courtroom, and that, to my knowledge, is where they are now.
They went into the courtroom not to do the arguments, to listen to the decision.
For a hearing, yes.
For a hearing. So the process was just beginning 20 minutes ago?
It's been in and out of various courts all day, and apparently this was, he said, the last emergency hearing for this case.
Okay, that's a federal district court in Dallas.
They're in Austin.
Austin. Federal district court in Travis County.
In Austin.
Okay. Now, they're at the county courthouse, and that would not be a federal judge. It would be a state judge.
That, to my knowledge, is correct.
Okay, now, Michael Grazik, the reporter with AP, just told Gloria that the case was before the Fifth Circuit. I'm trying to figure out how do you go through the gymnastics of getting from a Travis County District Court to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Yeah, I certainly would not stand here and profess to have an answer to that. I don't know.
One thing I'd like to have clarified, really, if it's an amicus, that normally means that the person filing the amicus brief is joining what the Race family is doing. Did the Patel family join as a party or as amicus brief joining in Patel? I'm joining in Bayon's case because that makes a major difference.
Yeah.
Amicus means you're going to help the one to file the lawsuit.
Yeah, but that means you're a party.
That's right. Are they intervening as a party or is it an amicus brief?
Oh, okay.
Because if they're not intervening,
So we're trying to read tea leaves, and the tea is very
dark. And I would imagine what they're trying to do is get a stay from some court, because I don't know how in the world you're going to go from a state district court directly to the Fifth Circuit, because you haven't exhausted state remedies. You got to go to the Court of Appeals or the Court of Criminal Appeals.
Okay, I hope the audience understands that we're anguishing over a series of facts here. Number one, the issue of standing is very clouded. Because I can see where a family filing an amicus brief would not be actually joining the case, but supporting somebody else's case, and that leaves wide open the issue of standing. Now, a family of one of the deceased parties would have some degree of standing, but not on an amicus brief.
Let me tell you what they're going to say. I'll tell you the argument's going to be, if this succeeds... In every death penalty case in the future, they're going to figure out somebody, a member of the family who was shot and killed and maimed, to come forward and claim they don't want the person killed and that they violated the code by not letting them have a mediation discussion with the defendant. And basically, it's going to be considered a delay tactics, what they're going to argue.
Well, I understand that delaying tactics, but then what happens in all of these cases, and Rick be my witness, is that we get here at the last minute, seconds countdown, and there is a drastic game of chicken going on.
Absolutely.
With both parties headed at one another, and here we are at the last minute, and everything is suspending out there. on a hope and a prayer, and sometimes that works, but rarely.
Again, I'd like to know if this is an amicus brief or an intervention on the family of Patel. Patel is the one that he was...
Patel is the one he's being executed.
That's right.
Killing Patel.
And is this an amicus brief supporting what the other gentleman is doing, or is this an intervention by the Patel family?
So, and you can't answer that question for me, can you?
I cannot. I just don't know.
Yeah. See, that's the trouble of being non-lawyers, Rick. But Rick, how long have you been concerned in this case?
Well, Race reached out to me last September and contacted me and asked me if I could help him. He told me what he wanted to do, so it's about 9 months now of pretty intensive and constant work with him and on his behalf to try to help him with what he is seeking to do. But it's been about 10 months.
Well, Rick, I have asked Gloria to keep an eye on this Michael Grazik guy. He's the AP reporter, and he's got more experience on his feet than anyone else around. If Gloria keeps an eye on him, if he turns around and strikes out for downtown Huntsville, then suddenly this execution ain't happening, because if this execution is happening, Grazik will be in that room.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking at him as we speak. He's standing across the street from the entrance of the Walls unit, down the block or so, but he's currently outside and just chatting with some of the special investigative staff.
Okay, I'm going to ask that y'all keep an eye on him and keep your ear to the ground for other news.
We will certainly do so.
And Gloria knows the number to call, okay?
All righty, Ray. Always a pleasure.
It's always a joy. Rick, next time you're in this neck of the woods, we're going to have to coffee up.
I look forward to it.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
That was Professor Rick Halpern of Southern Methodist University in Dallas, and he's been with, let's see, Rise Bouillon, who is a young man. And see, everybody's interested in this case. The Muslim community is interested in the case because Rise Bouillon has stepped forward as a Muslim, saying according to his religious beliefs, the execution of this fellow is wrong. And he's clearly intervened in a suit, obviously for delay.
Right.
That's clearly what he's there.
One thing I'd like to clarify, I think I might have jumbled it up some. Here's what happened. This case involved a rampage after 9/11.
Yeah.
And there were three people shot. One man shot and killed was a man by the name of Patel. Then another man from India was shot cooking hamburger, shot in the head. And then Raish Bouillon was shot and almost blinded, but he survived.
He was just a customer.
That's right. Well, these are all three separate incidents. They're all three separate ones.
Not in the same place.
No, sir. They were all within. In fact, the first shooting occurred September the 14th. That's when this gentleman, Stroman, goes into a place in Dallas where a guy was cooking hamburgers at a convenience store, happened to be an Indian from India, and he just shoots him in the head and kills him. Thereafter, on the 21st of September, which is about a week later, he shoots and kills Mr. Bouillon. Shoots Mr. Bouillon and almost blinds him. Doesn't kill him. And then on October the 4th, shortly after those two shootings, he walks into a convenience store, and that's when he shoots and kills this gentleman named Patel. That's what he's being tried for, the murder of Patel.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the problem they've got, because if they're going to claim that they have the right to be as a victim's family, to going into victim's rights, the truth of the matter, the only people that would have that right to do so would be the Patel family.
Directly.
They have standing.
Yeah.
Whereas in this case, Bouillon does not have standing, because it's not his case he's being executed for. There's the big problem.
Well, that case is apparently where we started. We do not know at this point where we're on. We have it on reports. I haven't seen it in black and white. We have it on reports that both the families of the two dead victims have intervened in some way in the case.
Okay, let me explain how that works. What happens if you file a lawsuit and I decide to help you, I file an amicus brief.
Sure, I understand.
But I can intervene, but the audience may not understand. I'm going to explain it to you to the audience. The problem is if they file an amicus brief, that simply means they join Bouillon's complaint. But if they intervene as a party to the lawsuit, that's entirely
changes
different.
Changes the whole game.
You understand that, but the audience may not understand
that. Because I've been in courts, and so some nice folks have filed amicus briefs.
Even as a defendant.
They don't always help. But Dave, are you there? Dave. Hello. Dave Atwood.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, are you following what's going on here?
I have. I've been listening to you, so I've heard what's going on.
Yeah, this
sounds
is what...
like things are at least delayed, maybe called off for the day.
Well, we don't know. Everybody's hanging by their fingernails.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had, Ray, we had about eight people out here on the corner of Alabama and Woodhead by St. Stephen's Church. And I tell you one thing, the age of this group is a little up there, and we need some younger people. So if any younger people are hearing this, please come out to these vigils, wherever they are.
No, let's backtrack. How do people, younger or older or anyone, get involved in your organization so that they know when these events occur?
Okay, the best way is to go to our website, which is tcadp.org, tcadp.org. The other, if you go there, you can get connected with us. And, of course, we've got a chapter here in Houston where we are, of course. And we have also a listserv that just services the Houston area. And the best way for people to get connected is to get on our local Houston listserv, and then they'll find out about the vigils and everything else that's going on. So we do need, like I said, we need some young people. We need some... A lot of us are just, you know, we've been doing this for many years, and we need some fresh blood to help us out.
Okay, so you had six or seven people out there, and the heat got to them.
Yeah, we had about eight people tonight. It was, you know, it's hot out here. I don't blame people for not coming because of the heat, but it's not that long, so it's... It's a good thing to do, and we always get a pretty positive response back from the people that are driving by, and there are a lot of cars that go by. We have our banner, we have our signs, and it's good. I mean, this is, you have to get out and show people how you feel about this issue.
Thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate the work that you're doing, and give our regards to the vigilance as they have remained. And give those good folks over at St. Stephen's our regards. They have been.
I will. I'll certainly do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. That was Dave Atwood, and he is of the Texas Coalition Against the Death Penalty. And he's an activist here. We heard earlier from Gloria Ruback. And Gloria is an active member of anti-death penalty organizations here, and they have regular meetings at the Shape Center. Larry, you want to pitch in here?
Well, as Jim and I were talking earlier, our feeling was for a death penalty case. This one seems to be pretty much on a fast track. It has been less than 10 years since 9/11, and these incidents happened right after 9/11. And it just seemed as though something ordinarily does happen to delay these cases. This method seemed to be extremely creative, though, in terms of the victim's rights
position.
This
is entirely different. We haven't run across this before.
Looks like there's... somebody's trying to create new law.
Yeah, I heard very carefully what Jim had to say, and Jim, your microphone's live. You can jump in here anytime you want to. The deal is that I'm familiar with the victims' rights legislation. I've tracked it when it passed in the Texas legislature back in the 90s. And I was with some advocates over there trying to do victims' rights stuff.
I have a question for you, Ray.
It is a statute.
I understand, but what he's complaining about, the victims' rights gives the right for the victim to mediate with the defendant. What do you do that in a death penalty case when the victim is dead and it's a family left? What are you going to mediate?
Yeah,
he's on death row.
I understand.
What do you mediate?
But, hello, Jim.
Well, I'm just asking.
We're talking about the Texas legislature.
I understand.
Well, over half of what they do in every session of the legislature is unconstitutional at the time they do it.
Let's mediate this case, and you're going to have what? Who's going to say what to who? And why do you mediate? Because he's on death row. They mediate him off death row?
But absolutely, The thing about it is they're not going to mediate him off death row because the sentence is the sentence.
Right.
The victim's rights are the victim's rights. And if you start trying to confuse the sentence with being the victim's rights, then that's going to get confusing. By the same token, if you confuse the victim's rights for the sentence, that's going to get confusing. I mean, I'm trying to get a guy out of prison right now after 20 years. Hell, if he'd had a 45-year sentence, if he had life, he'd already be out, according to the way the numbers worked in 1991.
But what does he want to do?
So the deal is, no, I think it's very clear what he wants to do is delay this execution.
Right, but
I think that's very clear. I don't think that there's a credible argument against that. But this has been on the books for decades.
Is it applicable to people on death row or people who are not on death row?
It is not specified.
Oh, it doesn't specify.
It doesn't specify.
Because I'm just curious, how can you mediate a death sentence?
Okay.
Use a, you know, what?
Well, maybe Chris Castillo. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Chris Castillo, you're on Execution Watch. I am Ray Hill. I am surrounded by wonderful lawyers. We don't know what's going on in this case. Apparently there are delays happening in the execution. I may interrupt our conversation if I get a news flash from Huntsville that something is going on. But right now, everything is on hold pending, apparently, an attempted to apply victims' rights legislation, which are laws, to execution legislation, which are other laws, and there seems to be, I can perceive, an enormous conflict, and the lawyers are finding that too. But I'm bringing you into this conversation because you have been an active advocate for the murder victims' families for reconciliation.
Yeah, that's correct. I really do see so much value in mediation. I mean, there are so many questions that the families have, and I think that it's very important that that be, you know, especially when the perpetrator has said that they're, you know, remorseful and they've shown remorse, that be allowed, and if at all possible.
Well, this actually began as kind of a hate crime.
Yes.
I'm one person who tried to steer the hate crime legislation in Texas so that it did not include executions. So I guess the execution sentence comes from the robbery killing aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's, or maybe the multiple murder aspect of it, a couple of aspects of this case that would get you there. But have you run across anything like this victim's rights being used as a vehicle in any of the other jurisdictions?
No, I haven't seen this yet. This is a very unique case. But I've known people who have been through mediation and also people who have been through surrogate mediation, and just the amount of healing they've got through that. And I just know that it is a very great resource that we have here in Texas.
Do you reach out to survivors of victims? Do you get evangelical about what your organization does?
Yeah, I just recently ran a story. Our story ran recently in the Rio Grande Valley, and I got a call from someone and just kind of told my story about my mother was murdered in 1991,
mm-hmm.
and I told my story, and that's one way that we reach out is we try and get, you know, letters to the editor published, and we try to reach out to individuals who publish letters to the editor in different papers throughout the U.S., and here in Texas especially is where I spend about 50% of my time, and we try and reach out to those individuals who, you know, are murder victim family members and are against the death penalty, because a lot of times they show that they want or that they don't want the death penalty in their cases, and that they make that very verbally clear to the attorneys. And sometimes they're heard and sometimes they're not heard.
Well, I know here in this area, Linda White, who's a very active member of your organization, but her culprit did not face execution, but I remember her excitement when he finally made parole.
Mm-hmm.
And her involvement in his reentering society. And it seemed to me like, after since I know Linda, I couldn't tell that whether she was doing this for him or whether she was doing it for herself or whether she was doing it for the memory of her daughter. Because the way she put it, it helps all of that.
Yes, yes, and she's a unique person, and that is one case where you really see how mediation helps heal the victim, and also helps, you know, the perpetrator understand what they've actually done and how many people they've actually touched through the process, you know, that they've committed or the crime that they've committed, because that's something that that. You know, a lot of times people get focused on, you know, what does it do to me when I'm, you know, when I'm put behind bars? But when they start thinking about the other ripple effect and the individuals who've been hurt through the ripple effect, then that makes them more remorseful and makes them, you know, more accountable for what they've done.
Where are you based?
I'm based out of Beaumont, Texas, but I travel a lot. I travel to Houston pretty regularly, and I also do a lot some national work. And I'm going to be going to Colorado and Fort Worth, Dallas, and I believe I've already been to the Valley a couple of times. And so it's just you know, wherever I need to be, and I'm on the phone a lot talking to murder victim family members and. And they seem to find me. They find our website, and we find them, and they find us, and we like to even, you know, even if they don't want to speak out and they don't want to be, you know, actively involved in the death penalty movement, we like to be there to support them because they, you know, they need help.
Are there things that people who are not victim survivors, but they like the work of your organization, is there something for them to do?
Yeah, there are a lot of different things that we do specifically with the different states. I know that there are some petitions that are signed that we try and react to all the action alerts that the Texas Coalition to Abolish Death Penalty puts out. And we have a kind of an overlap in membership with the Texas Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty, because a lot of our murder victim family members get their information as well. So let's say in this case, if they wanted to sign some petition saying that they didn't want Mark Stroman to get the death penalty, that they could, you know, work in that behalf. And also in the Garcia case, which recently made national news,
mm-hmm.
You know, that there were a lot of people who were making their voice known in that specific case, just because of, if nothing else, just because they wanted to make sure that our armed forces and that people who travel abroad were safe.
How do people get in touch with you?
Well, a lot of people get in touch with me online. My email is castillo@mbfr.org. But I have a toll-free number, which is 877-482-9334. And we're online at mbfr.org.
MVFR is Murder Victims for Reconciliation?
Murder Victim Families for Reconciliation.
Murder Victims Families. So it's MVF?
Yes, that's correct. Okay. Like Frank.
Okay. And so I admire the work that you're doing. We may be calling back because this is a continuing effort. We do this show every time there is an execution. Oh, by the way, where was your mother killed?
She was killed in Houston. Was having some contractors do some work on her home,
mm-hmm.
and the individuals who were doing the work had a key to the house, and they came in the middle of the night and had her sign some checks, and then they strangled her to death. And then they fled the country to Honduras. So I really, Garcia case, I really had, that was something that was kind of close to my heart, just because a lot of these people, if they're extradited, we'll put a stipulation in there that they can't face the death penalty. But there is no extradition from Honduras, but for Mexico, I've seen it happen before where they'll allow the person to come over and face their charges if they don't face the death penalty. So there's a lot of things that are at play here, and you know, as far as the resolution of cases as well, and not just, you know, this one case.
Chris Castillo of Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation, thank you very much for joining us on Execution Watch.
Thank you.
And that was a wonderful thing. The phones are now silent. We're back to the studio with Larry Douglas and Jim Skelton and myself. This is another one of those not a pretty cases.
Very pretty, very ugly case. Because this guy, you know, he had been a problem pretty much all of his life. He got in a lot of trouble as a juvenile. According to what the social worker said, he started using drugs and selling drugs at the age of 9. Started stealing cars and bicycles, doing burglaries and thefts, the things that people do to support drug habits. Worked his way through the juvenile system and apparently got probation, never did well, never received any drug treatment.
He was a frequent flyer in the juvie.
Then he gets out, and once he gets in the adult world, first thing we know, he gets sent to the penitentiary for a burglary and theft. And in the burglary, broke into a man's house, ransacked it, tore it up, and ended up getting the guy's checks and emptied his bank account. And one of the things they mentioned in the workup, the gentleman whose house was burglarized never recovered any of his property. He got 2 years on that case, and that sentence ran concurrent with a different theft case. So he got 2 years in the joint on that. Gets out. After that, he then robs a woman outside of an auto parts store, steals her purse, and uses her credit cards and charges up a lot of bills. So he gets a robbery case, possession of stolen credit cards and use of credit cards, and he got an 8-year sentence on that. Gets out, and then he's busted a couple of times for prohibited weapons. In fact, he was on bond for having a firearm in front of a bar, and they filed him for a felon in possession of a firearm. And he was on bond for this when he began this rampage.
Now, he claims, or I read somewhere, that he is supposed to have a half-sister that was killed at 9/11. Did anybody verify that?
Never was verified. In fact, the prosecution took issue with that even had a sister, much less one that was killed in 9/11. And apparently it was never proven in court, because his theory was that he did this as a patriotic killing, because once he saw the towers burning, realized his sister was on the half-sister was on the top floor. But there never was any proof that anybody ever came up with that even had a sister, much less one that was killed in the Twin Towers. So that really, nobody really knows that. And based on that, he gets on this bend to want to kill Middle Eastern people. And, of course, the ones that did the 9/11 deal were people in Saudi Arabia and Egypt, but he doesn't kill those. He kills a guy from Pakistan, one from India, and one from Bangladesh.
And one from Bangladesh.
Yeah, diddly squat to do with 9/11.
Yeah, I was in my Bangladeshi-owned local convenience store this afternoon, and this is very much a conversation. And I said, well, you know, I mean, this guy, it could have been you if it had, you know, you had been in Dallas when this happened. It could have been you. And he said, well, I'm still opposed to the death penalty. And there's something about them Bangladeshi Muslims that have a forgiveness streak somewhere as wide as
some of them don't.
I would imagine, just like gringos, they come in all mixed bags, or other folks. Larry, pitch in.
Well, it just
talk about
interests me about the patriotism that he claimed to have. And it seemed not to have, not only did it not work for him, it appeared
didn't work
to
for me
that,
either, actually.
Well, his claim seemed to work against him.
Yeah.
It got him where he is today, I think, and in many ways, it's almost offensive, the way he seeks to try to justify, what he did based on a claim of patriotism seeming to try to make himself look like he's an important person and that he's trying to avenge the offenses against the United States of America. And I think it probably worked totally different, opposite than the way he wanted it to be.
It occurred to me as I read over Jim's fine notes and other information that's come in about this case, this guy is living in a level of fantasy. I mean, this whole John Wayne patriotism, shoot
him up.
By the
way, John Wayne was a draft dodger. Larry doesn't like to talk about that, but he was.
Jump on poor old John Wayne.
Well, he was a draft dodger.
She died. You're not supposed to say bad things. He died. You're not supposed to say bad things.
He's a dead draft dodger. That makes you feel better.
Okay. But the deal is that this guy lived at a level of fantasy.
Right.
Clearly.
Well, so did John Wayne.
John Wayne was an actor. I hope he did. Actually, there is a new movie out where he played the old one-eyed guy.
Yeah.
The new actor. Actually
plays a real McCoy.
Plays a better job. People say, well, I didn't believe that there could be a better rooster than John Wayne, but there has been.
Another question, Ray. I was curious about this, and I asked Karen D'Amico to come down here. One of the things that's fascinated me when I read this, why does Dallas, for example, Dallas is the only city that killed a president over political things. During the Vietnam War, most of the real radical cases came out of Dallas where they're prosecuting people for flags. Anytime you wanted an outrageous...
I know. I've had to go testify in three flag cases.
In Dallas. And then we got this nut, and there were a lot of people...
And there for a while, I said, I'm not going to go to Dallas. I will change planes three times to keep from flying over Dallas airspace.
We have a person in the studio who was educated in Dallas. Now, I'm going to know what it is about Dallas that makes people so crazy.
Karen has given me the high sign. She is not interested.
She's not defending Dallas.
She's not defending Dallas.
Karen,
but you've said the same thing about Fort Worth. You said you read these cases and you can tell which ones come from Fort Worth.
But Fort Worth is different. Fort Worth will look you in the eye and cut your ears off. I mean, they don't mark Bashwell at Dallas. For some reason, produces these nuts. And we had everybody in America saw 911.
Okay.
Yet only Dallas produced a nut that goes around killing Arabs.
Right.
What he considers to be Arabs.
And
they're not Arabs.
And he doesn't have them right.
No, he doesn't even Arabs the ones he killed.
Okay. I need to tell the audience that actually we're on a time deadline. They've got 3-hour window to proceed with this execution. And if they don't start the execution before 9:00, it is not going to happen tonight. Now, do you think they will ultimately execute this guy?
Yes.
Larry?
I think so, too. But the delay I am pleased with and that I'm concerned about due process.
Mm-hmm.
And this Bouillon case that I'm not particularly familiar with, but it raises some issues that I think someone is saying, we've got some time, let's just take a look at it and just see, is there anything here? Because the whole act of killing another human being is distasteful, even for those people who support
Even as we speak, a call has come in. Elizabeth is on the horn, presumably with Huntsville. So we may have something to report, or we may not. It all depends on. But if they have not begun this execution by 9:00, it is not happening tonight. Tonight we started out with an execution watch show that began with literally the words, Mark Stroman will be dead at the end of this hour. We are approaching the end of this hour. We've got about 14 minutes left. As far as we know, Mr. Stroman's execution is not proceeding at this time. And unless it starts with relatively soon time, it's not going to happen tonight. And so I want to tell all of those listening that it is always a joy to do any execution watch, at the end of which I do not have to tell you that they're rushing his body or her body to Huntsville Funeral Home. So what family showed up can feel the warmth in the body before it goes away. So at this point, we do not have a dead body to take to Huntsville Funeral Home. And so far, that is good news. We have been doing these shows now for several years. We've got Rick Halpern coming on there. Put it on hold. And Rick, are you there?
I am, yes.
What's going on?
Really, people are waiting. I would say everybody here is in limbo with the same kind of questions. What's happening? What are the points being raised? You know, it's easy to say nothing's going on, but there are about 30-some-odd people here who really are on pins and needles waiting and waiting for what they want to be a favorable result.
If I am familiar with the statute, the window for execution is from 6 until 9.
Yes.
It's a three-hour window. And if they have not begun the execution before 9 o'clock, it ain't happening. And we go off the air at 7 o'clock, and that still leaves 2 hours. And so we're in suspense. I give our appreciation. It's just so good to end a show where we don't talk about a cadaver.
Well, it, you know, it's at the moment, it's certainly not bad news. So it certainly could be very uplifting news by the time a result is announced, for sure. At this point, you know, we're just waiting.
Okay, Rick, we appreciate you going to. Do you have anything else you wish to say to the audience?
For those who are working to end this nightmare, I just hope that we keep up this, and hopefully one day soon we can talk about this in the past tense instead of talking about it in the present.
Yeah, it would be nice to do an over-the-show analysis of all that we have gone through over this issue when
that
this is no longer an issue.
It would be a great show to have to talk about it as a win.
Well, I look forward to interviewing you on that, Rick.
Likewise.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Bye-bye. So as we end this show, we remind you that Mark Stroman breathes, and he has not had any needles stuck into him, and the folks in Huntsville don't know any more than we do. Normally, if there's not going to be an execution and we find out that there's not going to be an execution before we go on the air, we do not go on the air. I want to thank Jim Skelton for coming in. Thank you for sharing your expertise and advice. Larry, thank you for sharing your expertise and advice. I unfortunately think that Mr. Stroman has a high likelihood of being executed ultimately.
Oh, yeah.
He may dodge this bullet today, and he may dodge another one for other reasons. Karen and I have already discussed that, and she's decided that she does not want to do that. Elizabeth's trying to get another female voice. Elizabeth, take up the microphone. I just give her a microphone. She wants a female voice here. We can get one. Elizabeth, can you hear me? No?
Well, I just wanted to hear what our other attorney, Karen D'Amico, had to say.
Well, she advised me as we were coming in the studio that she was going to be a silent partner in this firm.
She refuses to defend Dallas.
Jim tried to goad her into defending Dallas.
Well, it was a heck of an opening to give her. I'd just be interested in her thoughts about the case in general without Jim leading her into a battle about whether people in Dallas are crazy.
Okay, Elizabeth, we're going to leave it there. Oh, by the way, I've got to do the report, and I've got plenty of time to do it tonight. This program would not be possible if it were not for our executive producer, which is Elizabeth Stein, whose voice you just heard. She makes all the decisions and gives us the guidelines and timelines, and she cakes all the connections, and she hunts down all the guests, and she does a remarkable job. The whole thing is possible because of the technical wizardry of Otis McClay. Otis McClay is a longtime Pacifican. He began at WBAI in New York. He is here at KPFT and with Pacifica National. And he is also very active over at Houston Media Source, where I've been hanging out a lot lately. And he also keeps our website. All of our programs, including this one, show up on our website in just a few minutes after the show is over and in the archives, and it is available to you. You can hear every show we have ever done. And I think in the duration we have done four breaking news stories that did not result in an execution when an execution was scheduled. We like those shows. They're better than where we talk about bodies. Tonight, our studio engineer is Daryl. Thank you, Daryl, for Doyle. Doyle, thank you, Doyle, for coming in and filling in that capacity. And we have come through. My name is Ray Hill. And the two attorneys here are Larry Douglas and Jim Skelton. Jim's been with us a long while. Larry has added his wonderful voice to our team in the last few weeks. And we're also sitting in the studio, Karen D'Amico. D'Amico? As has been in the studio checking on these guys. Usually that seat is taken by Susan Ashley, but I understand she got a reprieve.
She's gone to Connecticut.
She got a reprieve and went to Connecticut, which is not, it is a cooler place than Houston,
Texas. Well, it's not anymore.
Not anymore, okay. I guess temperature change got them as well. Execution Watch is next scheduled show. Is going to be the scheduled execution of Martin Robles. And if that happens, it's going to be on August the 10th. We hope that it doesn't happen. You can get details about that case if you go to executionwatch.org. Tonight you've been listening to Execution Watch, a program that ended at least on a temporary positive note. We do not know what's going to happen between now and 9 o'clock. We do not know the long-term fate of Mark Stroman. It's an interesting case to read about, as I have found them all. And we have done shows in here where Jim and I would look at one another and say, wait a minute, they're killing the wrong guy here. We've done those shows.
Yeah.
And we've done shows where sometimes the details of which make even us uncomfortable, and we're so jaded you'd think we would get used to just about anything. But that's the nature of the thing. There's an awful lot in the media about this being hate crime stuff. But I do not believe that hate crime was an element of a final conviction in any case resulting from a trial in Texas.
He's a little cranky. He might have been hateful. He's a little cranky.
Is he cranky? Yeah, but I think that he's driven by a level of fantasy that he's not crazy, obviously, because he knows how to manipulate people's credit cards and use their checks to empty their cases and that sort of thing. But he is on the borderline. Elizabeth, tell me it's time to go. My name is Ray Hill. Thank you for listening to Execution Watch on KPFT Houston.